And welcome to the Dividing Line on a Tuesday afternoon. It's one of those days. It's going to be an interesting week. We have another Dividing Line tomorrow, and then I don't know if we're going to be able to work anything out for the rest of the trip that I'm going to be taking. I'm going to be in Nashville on Tuesday of next week. Pretty certain I'm not going to be able to do anything that day. Not sure what next week's going to look like. Might be able to do a few screen flow videos or something keep the channel rats happy or something like that. But anyways, we're going to cram two programs in, one today and one tomorrow. Probably just normal programs. Yep, probably not going mega. We've got plenty of stuff to be doing today, though. This morning, very early in the morning, someone is saying, is it just me or is the audio really peaked out? I don't know what that means, but this audio is bad, distorted, stuff like that. So I'm not sure what that means. I will talk more quietly. Obviously, there's not much I can do about that. Anyways, early this morning, I was up very early this morning. My wife flew to Miami on business, and she wanted to get a ride in before she left. So we got up at 2:10 this morning. Yes, there are some of us who actually ride bikes at 2 o'clock in the morning. And so I was pretty early on getting hold of not only the new ebook that has come out that Albert Mohler helped to edit. Albert Mohler edited, I guess, helped edit, in response to Matthew Vines. But I was very thankful to see, because I did not think this would happen, that Kindle released the Matthew Vines book concurrently with the paper. Now, some of you may have noticed that Kindle will sometimes they delay the Kindle release till after the paper release, so that if you really want the book, you're going to have to buy the physical product, and then you can get the Kindle version later on. Well, as soon as I got up this morning, there was an email in my email box about the pre-order of the book. So I fired up my Kindle, and lo and behold, there it was. And so I started recording it immediately. So I'm already about two-thirds of the way through Matthew Vines' book, and I read all of the ebook as well. Some of you may not know who I'm talking about when I talk about Matthew Vines. You may recall, I think it was 2012. Sometime in 2012, we did a five-hour response to Matthew Vines. Well, it wasn't technically 5 hours because we played his presentation, and his presentation was right at an hour and 10 minutes. So about 4 hours worth of response to Matthew Vines, a young man, self-identified homosexual, claims to be a Christian, and gave a talk at a liberal church in Kansas. Basically, in essence, what you have with Matthew Vines is the face of the modern Christian homosexual movement, similar to Justin Lee in many ways, not identical, but similar. And what you have in essence with Matthew Vines is what I would call putting a friendly face on John Boswell. Now, John Boswell was a homosexual historian who really, the large majority of the material that's coming out today, and if you have looked, by the way, at Amazon and have looked in the homosexual studies area, I can only describe it as a flood. I don't know how anybody keeps up with it. I read a lot of books on the subject of homosexuality, but I couldn't keep up with it even if I tried. I've read 3 books in the past 10 days on the subject. One was Ken Wilson's A Letter to My Congregation. And I said I'm two-thirds of the way through Matthew Vines' new book and the ebook from the guys at Southern. And even if I kept up that pace, I would not be able to keep up with the number of books that are coming out. It is absolutely a flood of material. In reality, what we're facing is just such a massive frontal assault that I think by now most everybody is coming to realize that I haven't been doing the Chicken Little thing. That I've been warning about this for a long, long time. And very clearly now we see that the key point at which the world is demanding compromise on the part of the Christian church is this issue of sexual and moral ethics. And I was very thankful to see that Dr. Moeller and those who wrote the ebook response see the exact same thing that I have tried to tell people about for a long time. And maybe hearing it in another voice, maybe hearing it in other words, the end, it's probably Dr. Moeller's conclusion, I would assume. But right toward the end, Dr. Moeller specifically makes the assertion that this is a gospel issue. This is an issue where we are literally discussing whether we can or cannot any longer define the gospel. We are talking about what sin is. We are talking about whether you can identify sin. And if you cannot identify sin, if the Bible is so unclear that for literally 2,000 years, the people of God could identify something as a grievous sin that is in no way at all a sin at all, how can we call for repentance for anything? If it's a scriptural sufficiency issue, and it is a gospel issue. And unfortunately, many evangelicals are dismissing it as a side issue, as something that's not really relevant whatsoever. And that is not good. Mr. Pierce, do we need to do something here? Because I am being distracted by the fact that people are telling me that they see my mouth moving, but no sound.
I know. Working on it, trying to figure out, and that's not good either. I'm going to turn that down.
Everybody's saying the audio stream works, but...
Yeah, I know. We're working on the same story we were working on an hour ago with the sound issues are suddenly coming right back to haunt me here. So I'm working on it. Keep plugging away, and I'm going to get it corrected.
So until then, folks could go to the audio stream.
Audio stream on the Realtek is working fine, but for whatever reason, the Asus Zone R is not cooperating with me at the moment.
Maybe someone in channel would be kind enough. Wait a minute. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to copy a link, and I am going to use this for the sound stream for the moment. Boink, and boink. Now, knowing my luck, there will be an odd delay between the two, and somebody will complain about that. But if someone could tweet out, that I can see, anyways, that we're aware of the sound issue, we're working on it, and you can use that, then I will retweet that. And there you go. So... I see you all. I understand. We are at least recording, I would assume. If what's that? But we are recording, maybe. So the audio will be recording, so that we can at least have that later on. Okay. Well, we for those of you who are wondering, we were concerned about this. We totally, as you know, have redone everything in the studio, and it was working fine. But then we had to redo everything outside the studio, where all the connections are. And once you start moving electronic equipment around, I almost feel like taking that URL and writing it down on a piece of paper and holding it up. Like, go here. Yes, we know. sir, hi. That is high. That's high, and that's all I know to say. But that's high in sign language. So, anyways, hopefully, at least the folks on Twitter should have seen that, and will be able to get the audio. Someone's saying the audio is ahead. Yeah, see? I don't know. There's an odd delay, though. Well, okay. That's even my daughter's asking, does anyone else have audio? Okay, well, we'll do what we can do here, and do the best with that. So, Dad doesn't know sign language. I know hi. That's better than nothing. Yeah. See, right as then she saw that. I think that's funny. All right, somebody put up something in the chat channel. Tell folks to grab the audio stream, or just keep posting the URL for the audio stream, because we need to press on here. Okay, what I'm going to do is I do want to look at just a couple of things in the Matthew Vines book, and then we have some... I shouldn't be watching the channel, but my daughter just interpreted my sign language as live long and prosper, which is really... It's totally inappropriate. Totally inappropriate to do that. Today would be a bad day for accordance. So I actually was planning on doing a little looking at stuff a little bit later on. So we'll see how that's going to work. I will try to fight through the distraction here as best I can. It may not be possible for me to do it. I don't know. We'll do our best, but I'll try to fight through it. And I know that once we get to the stuff with Eric and Cantor, it'd be pretty difficult to fight through that. So we'll see what happens. You know, technical stuff happens, and you think everything's working, and until you actually start doing it, believe me, I worked as a sound tech at a very large church. I would make sure everything was working just fine before that service started. Was that a guarantee that it would work once the service started? No, not in any way, shape, or form. I actually changed my theology. Generally, I didn't think that demons could inhabit inanimate objects, but I came to the conclusion that demons could inhabit sound systems. The pastor of the church agreed with that particular idea, too. So that's how it works. So, okay, I see the new book on your computer there, though. No delay there because it isn't changing. Well, that's true. Yeah, there's the new book. See, God and the Gay Christian. There it is. There you go. Here's how Albert Mohler started his article this morning. Evangelical Christians in the United States now face an inevitable moment of decision. While Christians in other movements and in other nations face similar questions, the question of homosexuality now presents evangelicals in the United States with a decision that cannot be avoided. Within a very short time, we will know where everyone stands on this question. There will be no place to hide. And there will be no way to remain silent. To be silent will answer the question. He's exactly right. He is exactly right. And as Carl Truman had said a couple years ago in a small book he put out, this will be the issue that fractures and, in his opinion, ends the utility, if there ever really was a utility, of the term evangelical. Because once you have that kind of a division, does it really matter? He's an evangelical. So is he. Well, they believe completely different things on massively important issues. Well, that sort of makes the entire term somewhat useless. What you have, let me just tell you ahead of time, we're going to spend some specific time, obviously, looking at specific arguments. Because those of you that heard the debate, well, the review that I did of Matthew Vines' material, we'll know that, I'd say it's been at least a year now. Some people on Twitter started sort of getting Matthew Vines and I together. You know how it works on Twitter. Somebody will tweet you and they'll put the other person's thing in it, and all of a sudden you're in the middle of a conversation you never really intended to have. And people started raising a rather obvious question, and that is, well, if Matthew Vines is starting an organization where he's going to be training people to go into churches and try to change their historical beliefs on homosexuality to actually engage in debate, then wouldn't it be good if Matthew Vines would debate James White, who has critiqued his video and his position? And So finally, I wrote to him via Twitter and said I'd be happy to come to the confab you're having, the little convention type thing that you're having, and I'd be happy to engage in a debate there, even in where I'm in the minority, and let's do it. I think this is something that's important to do. And Matthew Vine's response was that he would like to engage in a debate, but after the book came out. And so the next question was asked was, well, are you going to be responding to what James White said? And he said, yes, I'm aware of what he said, and the responses will be in the book. Well, the book's out, and I have it on my screen in Kindle. And I did a little search for the word white, and there's exactly one footnote that references the same-sex controversy written by myself and Jeff Neal. And it is a passing mention of the fact that we quoted rather in full the statements of John Chrysostom regarding homosexuality. And that's it. Now, my assumption is what Matthew Vines will say is, well, I've tightened up my arguments, or I've this, that, or the other thing, and I didn't really see that. I do see some material in the book that wasn't in the video, but that would make sense. The video is an hour long. The book is 3.5 hours in audio, so there has to be more there as far as footnotes and references and things like that. But it does not appear that any particular response was provided to the criticisms that we made, and most of the same arguments are still there, because what you have is a, as I said earlier, a Boswell retread, a restatement in a more personal way of the type of argumentation that John Boswell presented years ago. And almost all the books you see coming out are indebted to Boswell's material. Boswell himself, a homosexual, and his work highly suspect when it comes to historical accuracy and fairness. And very important to keep that in mind. Let me just mention one thing about this book, because I don't want to get into too many things other than just one little point here. Everybody's saying the sound's back, huh? What did you do? Lay hands on it? Restarted Wirecast. Okay. That's good. That's a good thing, I suppose.
It's still not the best scenario. We've definitely got a problem with the sound card, and I'm not exactly sure why it's doing what it's doing, but
we'll muddle through.
Hopefully, we'll muddle along and get the gist of
how's the blood pressure doing?
Oh, don't, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. For those of you who've never done anything like this, if you're sitting in front of five screens, two cameras, and three people, trying to talk about something like this while you're seeing all the stuff going on Twitter and in the channel, and it ain't easy. So if I've seemed a little bit scattered, aside from the fact that I got up at 2:00 this morning, that's probably why. So I apologize for that, but it does happen, and we will get it all worked out. Once we got it working, we won't touch anything. And that's sort of how you do these things. But anyways, Dr. Moeller has recognized the importance of this book. I recognize the importance of this book. I recognize the importance of Ken Wilson's book, A Letter to My Congregation. I recognize the importance of Torn, Justin Lee's book. Let me use an illustration that maybe some of you will catch that otherwise you might not hear from me. How many times have I talked about the fact that most Protestants are Protestants of convenience rather than conviction? They believe what they believe because that's what we believe at my church. And the Roman Catholic Church, well, you know, it's a little bit weird, the Pope and the silly hat and the censors and that stuff. But it's not a conviction that it's a gospel issue. It's not a conviction that the gospel stands or falls with issues that are related to Roman Catholicism, that Rome has a false gospel. There aren't that many Protestants of conviction anymore. And many that are Protestants of conviction are ignorant Protestants of conviction, so it becomes Protestants of prejudice rather than conviction, which doesn't really help us much either. The reason that someone will hold to the truth of justification by faith is when that conviction really goes into the soul. I've said of people who've become Roman Catholics, for example, I can't imagine anyone who has ever truly, with their heart and soul, recognized the beauty of the imputed righteousness of Christ, then trading that away for the treadmill of Roman sacramentalism. I can't believe that that could happen. It'd be so strange for someone to be able to do that. Well, use that as an illustration for what we have here. I'm afraid the vast majority of evangelicals who are opposed to the normalization of homosexuality, homosexual behavior, and certainly opposed to the redefinition of marriage, do so not out of a knowledgeable, knowing, thought-through conviction about God, God as creator, gender as part of God's intention for mankind, as a result, marriage being something that reflects God's purposes, as being a gift of God that stabilizes society, that gives us what we need to be raised properly, to have a proper foundation for living a godly life, etc., etc. Rather than having a positive conviction that this is Jesus' teaching, Jesus clearly taught that marriage is this, gender is this, he honored the law of God, all of that, I'm afraid that most evangelicals, the real foundation of their view of homosexuality is the ick factor. Now, there is an ick factor to homosexual practice and to the vast majority of homosexual experience. There is an ick factor. It's a natural ick factor. But that's not enough. It may have been enough in generations past. It's not enough anymore. And it's not going to be enough for us over the next few years. Because given the speed at which this has been going, I'm not in any way being an alarmist to say that 10 years from now, we may not have the freedom to even discuss what we're discussing right now without facing severe civil and, who knows, maybe even criminal repercussions for so doing. And if anyone says, oh, you're just being, you haven't been paying attention. And as Dr. Moeller says, it's an inevitable moment of decision, and everyone's going to have to make that decision. You are going to have to make that decision. And if you say, well, I'm just going to leave that to my elders, you got to realize what your elders decide as the position of the church is going to have tremendous impact upon you as an individual. And it has to be a personal conviction on your own part that your church is speaking the truth on this matter. And there will be many of you listening to the sound of my voice right now that will go to churches that will choose to go the other way, that will choose to de-emphasize the biblical teaching on morality and ethics and sexuality, and especially the nature of marriage. And the reason they will do so is because they will read these books, and they will read Ken Wilson's book, and they'll read Matthew Vine's book, and they will fundamentally reorient the Christian message to avoid the pressure of the society. These books, and Dr. Moeller brings this out, these books will give them the excuse they need to opt out of the conflict. And I'm no pollster. I'm not a prophet nor the son of a prophet. My gut feeling is that as I look at the state of evangelicalism in the United States today, that split, that That change is going to leave those who hold to, and I hate this terminology, but the traditional view of marriage, those who hold to a biblical, the only possible biblical understanding that marriage is heterosexual, one man, one woman. I'm listening to all you liberals going, yeah, but they had this and that. I know all about that. Look at what Jesus taught, okay? One man, one woman, it's heterosexual. That's definitional of what it means to marry. That's how you get a husband and a wife, not two husbands, not two wives. The words have meanings. You can't change that. The number who will stand on that ground will be the minority of what calls itself evangelicalism today. That's my prediction. And it's going to cost. It'll cost us. It'll cost each one of us individually. And it all comes back to what our convictions are. If this is an issue of the sufficiency of Scripture, and it is, folks, listen to what Matthew Vines is saying. Matthew Vines, John Boswell, Ken Wilson, all these people are saying that the ancient writers, that Paul and Matthew, they didn't know what we know today about sexual orientation. They were ignorant of these things. Think about what that means for a second. It's a convenient foil. It's a convenient way around things. But think about what that means. They didn't know. And on the basis of their not knowing, there have been, well, one of the biggest arguments of Matthew Vines. Here's Matthew Vines' positive argument. A good tree brings forth good fruit. Since the teaching of Orthodox Christianity has brought forth negative fruit in alienating homosexuals, homosexual suicide, homosexuals abandoning the faith, that's bad fruit. Therefore, that can't be from a good tree. Therefore, we need to rethink all these texts, all based upon the idea that, well, you know, no one back then knew about these things. How do you hold to the sufficiency of Scripture now that you've adopted that perspective? He goes right after complementarianism. He goes right after a biblical view of male and female in this book. He has to. He has to. It's the only way that he can establish his position. Notice how all this stuff's related. Sometimes, again, I've tried to warn people, you can't do the chicken coop theology thing where you've got, you know, you've got your theology of God here, and your theology of the Bible here, and your theology of man over here, and your theology of the church here, and it's all separated, and you never bring them close enough together to get uncomfortable as to whether they're consistent with each other. Now we're seeing why. Because really, one of the reasons evangelicalism as a whole is going to collapse on this is because what? What would be the only foundation that could bear the weight of really dealing with this issue? The highest view of Scripture. And have I not said over and over again that even in conservative seminaries, there are many who teach who will sign a paper that says, I believe in inerrancy. You listen to what they're saying. They've redefined the term. They've redefined the term. They don't believe in inerrancy. They believe that the Bible inerrantly communicates X, Y, or Z, but they don't really believe that the Bible is inerrant. They don't believe that what was written by the authors is theanoustos, or that what they really believe is that, you know, sort of some type of spiritual message is communicated, but the words themselves, well, you know. There's a foundation here, and what Matthew Vines is saying would absolutely destroy any commitment to scriptural sufficiency. And it absolutely destroys our ability to define sin so as to proclaim the gospel. If there is no sin, if you cannot define sin, if sin is just simply a personal preference that I have, and I define it, and it's when I'm not the best I can be. If that's what sin becomes, how is that going to impact our proclamation of the gospel? The gospel becomes a personally defined thing rather than an objective, powerful message that calls men and women, boys and girls, to bow the knee in submission, in repentance, and faith toward the Lord Jesus Christ. This is a gospel issue. What Matthew Vines is doing is nothing, absolutely nothing short of seeking to completely subvert the gospel message. That's what's going on. And so when we look at these books, they are providing the excuse for those who are already compromised in the area of scriptural sufficiency, sola scriptura, tota scriptura. They're already compromised there, so the foundation is no longer solid for them to stand firm on issues like this. And so when we talk about, when we've seen what's been going on, we've seen what's been going on and what calls itself evangelicalism in the erosion of the roles of male and female, in the denial of complementarianism. And Matthew Vines recognizes, look, if complementarianism is true, if God has a purpose in maleness and femaleness, and if there is a complementary relationship between male and female, both physically, mentally, and spiritually, so that a man is changed by the otherness of the woman. And every man that I know of that's been married for more than 2 months knows what I'm talking about. Every man who's been married more than 2 months knows exactly what I'm talking about. They don't think like us. And they don't act like us. And that's a good thing. We like that, but not all the time. I mean, sometimes the arguments are over, well, honey, why can't I do it that way? And she can't necessarily give you a really good reason. But if you want to stay married for a while, you don't necessarily look for that good reason. I just got amens from the other side of the wall. I mean, that's amazing. I didn't know I was preaching, but it's an all-male audience here today, so I got amens. We are changed by the otherness of that person to whom we become bound in a way that we could never be bound to anyone else. I mean, I've been married nearly 32 years. That's not bad, you know? 32 years is a while. Some of you are listening to me haven't been around that long. A lot of people listening have not been around that long. 32 years, all right? I have not been the perfect husband. We've had our trials and difficulties. Normally been poor as church mice. She works hard so that I can do what I do. But when I think back on our lives and I think about the things we've been through together, that is a heritage that I could never share with anybody else. And the things we've been through, I'll tell you a story. I've told this story before. When Kelly went into, Kelly, my wife always has children, always has. It sounds like we're still having children. We're not. Both of our children came early, 7 weeks and 4 weeks. And we had gone to one childbirth class before she went into labor with Josh. And they had, one of the things they had taught us in this childbirth class is called effleurage. And you're supposed to help her relax by doing this little thing on her forehead like this. So Kelly's laying there, and you know that the contractions are coming, and we're alone in the labor room, you know, and the contractions are coming. So I'm new at this. This is my first kid, you know. And so we went to one class, and I'm a good student. And so you know, I can just tell she's really in pain with this contraction. And so I'm like, okay, you know. And so I reach down and I do this effleurage thing on her. Her eyes pop open and flames flew forth from her eyes and burned my hands from my body. Well, at least that's what it felt like. Her eyes pop open, and she looks at me, and she says, with the voice of Legion, says, "Don't touch me." after a while, guys, you get the message. Even when my daughter was in labor for 44 hours, whenever I'd walk into the room in the ward there, I don't know, I just felt guilty as a man walking into this. It's like the entire mental attitude of all the women was, this is your fault, people. If they weren't for you people, we wouldn't be on this. You know, it's like, I stayed outside most of the time. It just wasn't. So the point being, there are experiences we had. I could not have had that experience with a man. Complementarianism says that there is something in the correspondence and yet the difference between man and woman that changes us both and is absolutely necessary in God's created order for that kind of life-giving, the two shall become one flesh relationship. The point is, homosexual relationships, whether it's man, man, woman, woman, is a relationship with a mirror image. It is fundamentally disordered. You cannot have the kind of union. And I know, yeah, but look at how you heterosexuals have messed up marriage. I know. That doesn't change what I'm saying. That doesn't change anything. The reality still is that if we want what God has designed us to be, you don't fall in love with a mirror. And Matthew Vines knows that's exactly what the problem is. And that's why, look at under gender complementarity here. I actually have it... I should have it, anyways, on the screen. How would same-sex unions undermine Scripture's plan for human sexuality? The term he uses for us is non-affirming Christians frequently answer that question with one phrase, gender complementarity. As they see it, God designed men and women as exclusive complements to one another in marriage, making the differences between the sexes essential to the meaning of marriage. Now, he's exactly right. Matthew Vines knows exactly what his target must be. And as Al Mohler points out, the audience that is not going to be able to resist his reasoning is liberal Protestantism that's already collapsed on complementarianism already. They've already lost this. They've already collapsed on it. It's done. They have no basis for standing against it. Now, it's interesting. Let me bring it up here real quick. Are we not able to show anything today? Oh, okay. I just... Well, then why isn't it showing accordance? Let me show you something real quick here. I'll go back to the window and go to accordance. There it is. And I want to go to the Old Testament. Right there. Okay. Genesis 2:18. Oh my goodness, look at the time. Then the Lord God said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper fit for him." Now notice the Septuagint here. Ton anthropon monon, man only. Not just alone as in separated from others, but only man. And then you have, I will make for him, boethon kat auton, is the Greek Septuagint. Now, the Septuagint translation of the Pentateuch is very, very good. The level of Septuagint translation elsewhere, not so much. But in the Pentateuch especially. So that is how they render here in verse 18. This an etzer, a helper, kenegdo, a corresponding to, not the same as. The whole context here is all the animals are brought before Adam, and look, they're in pairs. Most of them are. Look at that, you know, and none are found that corresponds to Adam, and so I will make a helper who corresponds to him, a helper fit for him. And Matthew Vines recognizes, you know what, in this story, he doesn't make another man. He makes a woman. And nobody that I can think of until the modern age ever thought that what this story was saying was, well, you know, the whole thing is that Adam needed companionship, and it just so happens that God made a woman so that we could have, like, humans, you know, because, that's how you have humans, but it that's not really what the correspondence is. No, it is what the correspondence is. The fit helper for the man is not another man. It's a woman. And the one for whom she is created to be the fit helper is not another female. It's a man. Gender is a part of God's good purposes. And fundamentally, we are having a denial of that. We see that in Vines. We see that in how he's going to argue this later on. Here we go. God was looking for someone. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me pop this over to Kindle. There it is. God was looking for someone more similar to Adam than the animals were, someone with whom Adam could form a one-flesh bond that had to be, notice it says, another human being. Well, that's true. Adam commented only on the qualities he and Eve shared. Bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, he said, she shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. Adam and Eve were right for each other, not because they were different, but because they were alike. Alike as humans? I suppose that would be a good argument against bestiality, but that's not all the text is saying, is it? Because he calls her something other than himself. He misses that. He misses that. Notice that? He says, he even quotes, she shall be called woman. That's not the same thing as man. For she was taken out of man. Oh, that's a difference. He sees, obviously, that she is of his kind, but she is not him. She is not a mirror image. She is different. And he likes that. And that's a good thing. And he goes on to say, other common renderings include a help answering to him and a help corresponding to him. The Hebrew term for suitable, as a number of commentators have pointed out, can also encompass a sense of difference. That's right. It's not sameness. It's correspondence. But notice what he says. Now, this is a young man who says, I'm not a linguist. He's not. But he certainly makes a lot of arguments. But that's not an adequate basis on which to import the entire concept of gender complementarity we discussed in Chapter 2. Actually, it is, Matthew. It is. It is. So there's a lot more to be said. I want everyone to be aware of the fact that we are facing a flood of this material. And every one of you listening to me, housewives, high school students, I don't care what your position is, You must think through these issues in your own mind. I don't know how long this microphone is going to be attached to the internet. But as long as it is, I'm going to try to warn people and encourage people. Your faith must be your own. You must have thought it through. Once you've thought it through, you'll be able to express it with more clarity to others. This is vitally important. No one thought 30 years ago that this would be the apologetic issue of our day. But it is. And you know as well as I do that so many opportunities are available to you right now to discuss this area. Have you ever thought through how you can move from this area to the gospel presentation? Not in some cheesy, cheap way, but in recognizing that since this is a gospel issue, it naturally leads us directly to making that presentation. I think it's vitally important. We're going to have much more to say about that. We got off on a little bit of a rough start, but we will press on in the few minutes that we have left. We only have about 12 minutes left in the program, so I did want to shift gears a little bit. And I wanted to play something that's, I think it's important to play this, and this is a real shift. I mean, you smell that? That's the clutch burning. It's the clutch on the program. I have, it's really screaming right now, but we're gonna. This would normally be why, hey, do you have a commercial queued up? You know, type thing, but we don't have time for that today, because we had some issues at the beginning. Most of you heard the announcement that I made the last time that we were on the air, that Pastor Jason Smathers, who was sinfully sued by Dr. Ergen Kanner, who is unrepentant of his having sinfully sued a fellow Southern Baptist and fellow Christian, that the lawsuit against Jason Smathers for having posted the videos of Ergen Kanner lying through his teeth to the Marines was dismissed with prejudice. That the judge found quite appropriately that this was a matter of fair use, this was a matter of criticism of Ergen Kanner, and therefore the lawsuit was dismissed. I would really hope that once people have an opportunity of viewing these videos, that if he were to consider appealing this judgment, that so many people would come down on top of him that he would never think to do it. That would be the right thing to have happen. Whether that will actually happen, I don't know, because he has a number of enablers and people who assist him. I wanted to show you just one little short snippet from the one of the two Marine Corps videos. The quality stinks. The very fact that someone would try to copyright, he never has actually finished even applying for a copyright, but the fact someone would try to copyright things that he now says, you know, what is the story anyways? I mean, on Twitter, he's talked about how these are all edited and uploaded by hyper-Calvinists and all the rest of this lunacy, and that so evidently these are all just a bunch of lies, that this is, really isn't Ergen Kanner. In fact, I imagine it's so dark here in this picture that he'll say, that wasn't me. That wasn't me. You know, so we'll have to get all those Marines together to go, remember that guy? You know, but anyway, I just wanted to play one little clip here and point something out, and then invite everybody to call the Office of Communication at Bruton Parker and talk to good old P.D. Lumpkins and see if he can explain this for you, because I guess that's his job now, is to make up excuses for Ergen Kanner. But I want you to see this. Here is Ergen Kanner speaking to the Marines, presenting himself. He's half Turkish, half Swedish, and he's pretending he's an Arab. It's just pathetic, but he's talking about how we're just so thankful for what you've done for all of us, and he's primarily talking about Iraq and our people there, and I have half-sisters that have now learned to read thanks to what you... And I'm like, what? Swedish, the Swedish school system can't teach people to read anymore? What are you talking about here? It's just ridiculous. But some of you remember, in fact, let's do it this way. Let me go to this, and to this, and to that, and to that. Let's see if we can bring that up. Can we pop that up on the screen? There we go. This is, you can't see that because it's cropped, but up at the top of the screen, it would normally say, you would see the URL bar, and this is normangeisler.net/article/ergencanada/default.htm. Okay? This is currently on Norman Geisler's website. And you'll notice number 7. Ergen claimed his father had many wives and 2 half-brothers and 2 half-sisters, but there's no evidence of the half-brothers. Response. Ergen's father did have 2 wives, having divorced the first one. He had 3 sons by his first wife, Ergen and his 2 brothers, so Ergen has 2 full brothers and 2 stepsisters from his father's second wife. While speaking quickly on one occasion, he mistakenly called his brothers his half-brothers. This is hardly evidence of an attempt to embellish or deceive. After all, he had the right number of each sibling, and he didn't claim to have 10 brothers or sisters. And notice the assertion here. Ergen's father did have 2 wives, having divorced the first one. So what's the Norman Geisler, and we all know this was written, you know, we've told the story before, that we know this was written on a computer, licensed to Truett McConnell College, where Emer Kanner is the president, and had something to do with Thomas, and all the rest of that kind of stuff. And so we know this is the Kanner excuse sheet that's even been edited down since it was originally published, because so many of the responses were just so completely absurdly ridiculous. And then Norman Geisler had nothing to do with this, but he's putting his name out, so he's accountable for it, so that's a shame for Norman Geisler. But what it's saying is that Ergen Kanner's father was not a polygamist. Now, we now have numerous recordings of Ergen Kanner claiming that his father was a polygamist, that he had many wives, not that he had married his mother, then divorced his mother, then married somebody else, had more kids. That's not called polygamy in most people's minds, and it certainly wouldn't be the Abraham lie where he brings his wives with him and all the rest of that stuff. Might that be one of the reasons why Ergen Kanner didn't want this little segment out there in the public? This is part of the video that Ergen Kanner sued and lost to suppress. Here's what he says.
My father had more than one wife at a time. As you know, the Quran says in Surah 4, you're allowed up to 4 wives. So my father had 3.
Now, Dr. Lumpkins, calling Dr. Peter Lumpkins of Bruton Parker College, ring, ring, ring. Dr. Lumpkins, sir, could you please explain how the president of your college could say, well, what he just said, where he said, my father had multiple wives at the same time. And in fact, he said he had 3 in the context of at the same time. Could you tell us that? Now, someone on the channel had said that if I go to 1 minute and 15 seconds, or I'm sorry, to 1 hour and 15 seconds. Let's just see.
Because my father had listed my mother as property. It's true. And the guy said, your wife's not property. He said, of course she is. And then he brought his sisters, which is his other wives. That's how we bring in our other wives into America. We call them our sister.
There you go, folks. There isn't any question about this. No rational person on the planet could miss what Ergen Kanner was saying to those Marines. He was saying that when his father, now if you, and there's so much more we could do. He talks about how, he pretends that when he came here, he had no idea what American culture was like and all the rest of this. Remember, this is a guy who was here from the time of his earliest memories. How many of you can remember things before your 3rd birthday with clarity? And even that, before that, he was in Sweden. So here's a man standing in front of these people, pretending to tell them what life is going to be like where they're going to serve. And he has no earthly idea. And what he's telling them, without any question, is that his father was a polygamist, and that he brought, not married once he got here, but brought with him his other two wives, and claimed they were his sisters. That's what he says elsewhere, is the Abraham lie. There it is. You just watched it. You just heard it. The only excuse that these people are going to offer is, well, wonder how much time Jason Smathers spent editing that video. Man, he must have Industrial Light and Magic working for him. I did not know that Hollywood was infested with hyper-Calvinists. Did you know that? Did y'all know that? I didn't know that. But it must be, because that's the only way you could have so many people trained in video editing to somehow create Ergen Kanner's voice and his likeness and stick it on video like this. I would love to hear what Petey Lumpkins, Dr. Peter Lumpkins, Vice President of Communications, Bruton Parker College. I'd like to know what Peter Lumpkins says about, because we can't seem to get Ergen Kanner to comment on these videos. But maybe Peter Lumpkins will. So why don't we ask? Why don't we ask? And while we're at it, could somebody, please, who knows Norman Geisler, who has Norman Geisler's ear, some of you powerful big guys, could you show him this? Could you print out what's on his website and then show him this video and go, Norm, what you doing? He ain't going to listen to me. Maybe some of you who are older than Dr. Geisler, because he won't listen to people who's younger than he is. So maybe some of you that are older realize, you know, Norm, got a little problem. Somebody needs to deal with it. Somebody needs to deal with it. So, there you go. Wow, that was fun. Are we going to have some real surgery to do afterwards to try to fix this thing? So I wasn't even recording right?
Well, the first part, I mean, we got the audio and all, but, you know.
Freeze frame?
The vast majority of the show, we got the audio and the YouTube. Apparently, it's a little muddy, but they got the gist of it, so okay. I'll figure it out.
All right. Was it his fault or his fault? No, you don't understand. We have scapegoats here.
Oh, yes, we do have scapegoats. Well, no, I don't do what Peter Lumpkins, I mean... No, it's definitely me.
Okay.
No question about it. It was not any hyper-Calvinists.
There weren't any hyper-Calvinists in there?
Oh. No.
I thought this place was filled with them, according to what we're told.
Nothing like that.
All right. Yeah. Well, I guess that does it then. So thanks for listening to the program today, and who knows what we'll do tomorrow. Actually, I do. Oh, tomorrow, from... 1 to 2 p.m. our time, I'm going to be out with Janet Mefford talking about Matthew Vines. And then we'll go straight from Mefford right into the dividing line right afterwards. So, really, we are doing 2 hours tomorrow, just sort of differently. So, keep that in mind if you want to be listening. We'll see you tomorrow then. Go to the dividing line. God bless.